From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña with your state and local news update. Hundreds more Juneau residents with applications pending for individual assistance grants may get paid soon. KTOO's Jeremy Shea reports.
At a meeting tonight, the Juneau Assembly is expected to put more money into a second phase of the program for lower-income residents financially hurt by the pandemic. The Assembly initially put $2 million of the city's portion of the Federal CARES Act money into the program last year. It was enough to pay grants to about 1,000 people. Grants began at $1,000, but scaled up for residents with lower income and with children. Without Assembly action, about 1,200 more eligible people won't get paid. The Assembly is taking up two measures to address this group. One would put $700,000 more into the program. The other splits off the remaining people into a second pool with more restrictive eligibility criteria and smaller payouts. Assemblymember Michelle Hale walked through the proposed changes in committee last week.
It's just trying to make the money go farther.
People who received the city's housing assistance grant last year would become ineligible. Base grants would be half what they were in the first phase, ranging from $500 to $1,000. Each dependent child would still be worth an extra $300. Also, payouts in the second phase would prioritize the lowest income applicants instead of a first-come, first-served approach. And a quick disclosure, I've received the housing grant and applied for the individual assistance grant. The Assembly is scheduled to hold a public hearing and final vote on the changes tonight. A virtual meeting is scheduled to begin at 7 p.m. The meeting will also be live-streamed on the city's Facebook page and broadcast on KTOO. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
In other news, Governor Mike Dunleavy warned Alaskans away from, quote, misinformation regarding the pandemic and his administration's response to it. He encouraged people to challenge those making allegations.
Ask them to show you the data. Ask them to show you a memo, a letter, that we are contemplating martial law. That's ridiculous. It's never happened. Ask the individual or individuals that are spreading this misinformation.
Dunleavy first addressed the issue during a news briefing on Wednesday after Jeff Landfield of the Alaska Landmine asked about comments by Senator Laura Reinbold, an Eagle River Republican. Reinbold has likened the state's COVID-19 response to living under martial law. The governor said his administration would work with all legislators. After a pause, he added, quote, "We have no intention of declaring martial law." The governor circled back to a topic of martial law toward the end of the briefing.
But for those that say and continue to say today that we are contemplating things like martial law, that we are contemplating things like forced vaccination, that we're making this out to be a police state or some type of Stalinist state, they're just completely wrong. And I think they're doing all of us a disservice.
Dunleavy has taken criticism from public health advocates who urged him to impose a statewide mask mandate, which he declined to do. But in Senate Judiciary Committee hearings chaired by Reinbold, the administration's pandemic response has been criticized for going too far. Dunleavy compared his administration's approach to, quote, threading the needle in responding to the threat to public health while minimizing the harm from government action on businesses and people's lives. And Petersburg, like other communities in southeast Alaska, saw next to zero tourism last summer. But that might not be what's in store for this summer. Despite a Canadian ban on cruise ships, Petersburg could still see regular visits from small cruise lines this coming season. KFSK's Angela Denning reports.
Canada's announcement will affect large cruise ships in the industry, which are mostly foreign registered. Under U.S. law, they must stop at one of Canada's docks when heading to Alaska. But for the town of Petersburg, which sees a lot of smaller cruise ships, it won't have much impact.
Fortunately, most of the small ships that come into Petersburg are U.S. flag vessels.
Dave Berg is co-founder of the travel agency Viking Travel in Petersburg and books tourist trips all over Alaska. He also helps coordinate the local cruise visits. Shallow waters near Petersburg limit the size of ships, and those smaller vessels are usually American. As of mid-February, there were still seven cruise ships slated for 85 port calls in Petersburg between mid-May and mid-September. They plan to carry between 45 to 140 passengers each. However, Berg says, the ships probably won't be traveling at their full capacity.
Not only to allow for some social distancing, but to reduce crew numbers on board and to have some cabins available to allow people to quarantine should they be having symptoms.
That's the plan anyway. This time last year, many cruises were scheduled but didn't end up happening. The only cruise line that attempted a voyage in the region, UnCruise, canceled its trip after a passenger tested positive.
Last year, we virtually had nothing.
Berg believes this summer will be better. Cruise lines are touting stricter protocols, with some even requiring vaccinations for passengers and staff. Berg says those cruise lines cater to an older population who should be able to get vaccinated by the summer season. Also, he says, vaccinations should be spreading throughout the region's residents.
As we get closer to the season, we are going to be more confident in that there won't be a lot of COVID spread from visitors coming to the community.
One company that's still in limbo as to whether they can make the season work is Victory Cruise Lines. They plan to debut a Southeast cruise running from Vancouver, BC to Sitka. Company representatives met with Petersburg's borough administration in early February to talk about their mitigation plans, which included mandatory vaccinations. They were scheduled to have about 140 passengers spend most Saturdays in July and August in Petersburg. However, after the Canadian announcement, the regional cruise is up in the air. In an emailed statement to KFSK, CEO John Wagner said they'll continue working with government officials, fellow cruise lines, as well as travel partners, and they'll look forward to returning to cruising when policies allow. Berg says there's an effort to get Congress to grant temporary waivers to the Jones Act, which is the federal law requiring foreign vessels to stop in Canada.
I've seen some letters. There's definitely talk, and our senators are researching, and they've been approached by communities along the way that this is going to be devastating to the Alaska visitor industry.
In the meantime, places like Petersburg that see smaller cruise ships and more independent travelers could expect some sort of tourist season. Berg says there's a trend for family-sized groups looking to get away from the crowds during the pandemic.
People are, asking about those types of experiences rather than being on a bus that, goes into Denali, for instance, with a busload of people. Folks are looking for more opportunity to be able to be in a small group.
Some towns like Petersburg also have COVID laws in place for visiting ships. Petersburg's mandate requires captains to get pre-approval from the public health officer with the Emergency Operations Center before docking. The mandate is up for a possible extension at the end of February. The Centers for Disease Control still recommends people avoid cruises worldwide. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Alaska Native tribes are awaiting word on scores of wireless broadband licenses offered at no charge by the Federal Communications Commission. It's part of a federal push to improve internet access in traditionally underserved communities. A startup called Alaska Tribal Spectrum received a $100,000 grant to register Alaska Native tribes during the final months of last year's application period. Jim Berlin heads the Kenai-based nonprofit, which has signed up nearly 70 tribes.
Through a grant from the Denali Commission, we were set up to create a website and an application process to make it very, very simple to join a consortium application and get as many tribes to grab a hold of this free asset before the window closed.
Because when it does, any unclaimed broadband licenses will go to auction to private carriers. Berlin says it was a big push to get rural tribes with poor internet to enroll on their website.
And the struggles they had were some of the craziest stories you'd ever want to hear trying to get their application in. Some of them we ended up faxing to get it in. Some had to handwrite it, and do paper applications. I mean, it's so challenging for them to do even a simple email, let alone fill out something online.
One of those tribes is Douglas Indian Association near Juneau. Kamal Lindoff says his tribe's office was happy to get help with the application.
We had no clue, what this really was, and then no clue on how we would manage it or even get it started. We had probably a couple of different places contact us, and we kind of jumped on board with that one, just thinking that was all we needed to do.
Some of the applications overlap. The Douglas Tribe's application is for coverage in an area also claimed by Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. And individual tribes are now negotiating overlapping claims like these. Once that process is complete and the FCC issues licenses for 4G wireless networks, tribes will be able to offer the so-called last mile to improve internet connectivity in their traditional homelands. This is KTOO News.